This episode of Max Mike Movies is brought to you by Egoist. Hey, you want to smell good? Get Egoist. What, it smells like waffles?
There will be spoilers ahead. Lots of spoilers, so be careful, won't you?
Hello and welcome to Max Mike Movies. This is the last episode of our series Tops and Bottoms, a title that still confounds our host, Max Levine. What it means, of course, is that we're looking at the top and bottom performing films of a particular year, in this case, 1963. Last week, we looked at The Dregs, a little movie almost no one saw called The Day Mars Invaded Earth. But this week, we're going out on a hell of a bang. This is the longest movie we've done so far on the show. It's big. It's spectacular. It's a visual pageant. It's the Liz Taylor, Richard Burton epic, Cleopatra. It sure made a lot of money, and that's what's important, right? But wait, how much did it cost? Oh, we'll get to that. But first, let me reintroduce our host, the Cleopatra to my Flavius. Max, don't call me that. Levine, say something Egyptian, Max.
Let's walk like one.
So well done. So well done.
I am doing a flawless walk like Egyptian dance.
You go-go, girl. Where's that Bananarama? I can't remember.
It's the Bangles, you Philistine. Oh, the Bangles, right.
Of course, how silly. How can I possibly get them confused? Yeah, and I'm Mike Luce. We're going to get to that bloated behemoth of a film, but first, we'd rather talk with you about the
poll question.
Last week, it seems that we wanted to know how you like your science fiction movies, small and personal, or huge and splody. You said this. Up first, Brian Mundo with, quote, "I kind of like both. A bit of action is needed to keep my short attention span, but the personal focus makes me relate to the characters more," end quote. And of course, Fifth Element. Thanks, Brian! Matt Reisman said, quote, "I don't like when a small and personal movie feels the need to end big and splody, but I'm often okay with a big and splody movie ending small and personal, regardless of genre," end quote. Splody will be in the dictionary of this, I swear. Thanks, Matt.
No swearing. We're trying to keep G-rated.
Oh, yeah, right. I forgot. Shit. Oop! Nick Hoffman wrote, quote, "What's the
canceled
story about?" Quote, "What's the story about? That's how I go. I like both concepts on their own, but what's the story about?" End quote. Story is king or queen. Thanks, Nick.
That's fair.
Charles Forsyth followed up with, quote, "I'll just vote for what Nick said because, yeah, it's about the story. If susplosions support the story, then great." If
it's
that's what he said. "If it's just a set piece shoehorned in to add production value," there's only two kinds of production value, tits
and
ass.
Or worse, crying.
Or worse yet, to distract from a tedious story, then maybe they should have spent the money on a story editor, end quote. I'm going to vote to have susplosions added to the dictionary too. Thanks, Charles. Dave.
Hang on. Give me a whack on the side of the head. Get the needle unstuck.
Yeah. Sent, quote, "Given that choice, personal. Explosions are rarely interesting as they have no character and don't move the story much. Every once in a while they make a point, like the ones at the end of Dr. Strangelove. I do have a soft spot for gamma ray explosions, but the movies involving superpowers obtained due to gamma ray exposure have been disappointing and are not really sci-fi, despite the potential for sci-fi," end quote. I think he means both The Amazing Colossal Man and any version of The Incredible Hulk, which kind of the same thing. Thanks, Dave. Stolen. Weasel Yosef Forsyth offered, quote, "I love all sci-fi that's fun, intriguing, imaginative, and gets me to thinking and imagining. I don't care about production value as long as the story and characters grab me and pull me into their worlds. It doesn't matter if it's a student video network or the Brazos Community Theater, $0 budget, or a Mega Millions project from a big name. If it does that, it's my jam, end quote. Jam. Thanks, Weasel. How did I just know? Mm-hmm. Steve Kellner, had a lot to say. Quote, we were just discussing.
That doesn't sound like a lot.
I'm not done. Oh. You, however, are. Let me continue. Quote, we were just discussing a related issue about The Martian, small, versus Project Hail Mary, big, where we were discussing how the latter was more of a thriller because of the scope of the stakes, without splody stuff, I must admit, whereas the former was much more about problem solving and one guy, even though the rest of the world wound up getting involved. The big and explosive versus small and personal is also a classic theme in SF generally. I think of space opera, The Lensman, Star Wars, Guardians of the Galaxy, etc., versus tighter or smaller scale what-if stories. Honestly, I don't think I care, as long as I care about the issues and the people involved. The Star Wars prequels were boring because I didn't care about anyone. He wasn't alone there. Julian May's Saga of the Pliocene Exile, which is absolutely perfect for an HBO series, damn it, someone out there read it, is operatic in scope, but has numerous characters who fascinate and a few you invest in, end quote. I gotta agree, if we don't care about the people, it doesn't matter how lavish the production. Where will I hear that again? Thanks, Steve. Regan McStravick came up with, quote, I prefer all movies to be small and more personal. That said, I do sometimes like getting to blow things up on set, end quote. personal involvement. That's the ticket. Thanks, Regan. Tyler Stewart sent in, quote, I like movies to be smart, with good characters, plotting, direction, etc. Wow, he's demanding. The best movies make promises to the audience during the movie and fulfill those promises before the end. And if the fulfillment requires a big stage and explosions, so much the better, end quote. You're asking an awful lot, Tyler, but so am I. Thanks. Richard Tatum, one of the actors in that fine podcast, Q Footsteps.
Inventor of the Tatum.
Oh, you know, I keep forgetting to sharpen mine. It's still dull.
Oh, you cannot have a dull Tatum. You know, you never cut yourself on a sharp Tatum.
You're absolutely right. Everyone out there, as a public service announcement, sharpen your Tatum, won't you?
Yep, do it today.
Sounds dirty, but okay.
Really, anyway, does.
He posted, quote, to adopt my favorite Louis Armstrong quote about music, there's only two kinds of sci-fi, good and bad, end quote. Oh, there's also meh. Thanks, Richard.
Yeah, there's a lot
lots
of that.
And lots of meh.
Plenty
looking
of
at
meh.
You, Britain. Oh, we've got mail. From our pal Bill O'Lading, that is.
Bill O'Lading.
He missived, quote, lawyerly answer, it depends. A story told well regardless whether its scope is grand or focused. I enjoy Alien 1979, a film focused on a very small group of people in a small space, so small it's claustrophobic. But I also enjoy Independence Day 1996, a film literally global in scale. Broadly, I'd say big and splody, since that's really only possible in film. You can get small and personal on the stage or on the idiot box. However, big and splody can quickly become so preposterous as to be annoying. See 2012 and 2009. Big and splody films are also not well disposed to sequels franchises that endure. For every Star Wars, there's a Matrix or Jurassic Park whose concept did not age well. Franchises are best left to television, in my view, end quote.
Interesting.
All well and good. I don't know if I agree with the television part, but that's okay.
Nope. Interesting points.
Yep. Thanks, Bill. Oh, the red light's blinking, but Max, don't take your love to town. It's just the indicator that our old friend Doris Hempelmeyer has left another little bon mot on our hotline.
My personal red light district.
That's really disturbing. Let's listen.
Hello, Max Mike Movies. Hi, Max. This is Doris Hempelmeyer here to answer your poll question. Boy, that's a tough question. I mean, there's as many different kinds of science fiction as there are movies in general. I'm going to say it depends on my mood and if the movie's good. Because sometimes you like a big bang, you know? You just kind of want to lose yourself in the noise and forget the noise of the real world, right? But sometimes you need a really good story. I think the really good story is going to win out in the long run. But, I think it just kind of depends on my mood. My mood's always good when it's with Max. Anyway, I hope you guys have a wonderful rest of your week, and I look forward to hearing next week's episode. Ooh, that's going to be a doozy. Talk to you later, Max. Bye.
Well, thank you, Doris. Yeah, what do you think about that, Max?
That's a good point. I mean, ultimately, it is about the story.
Yeah.
Or for me, it's the characters. But yeah, no, I get it. It's also it's about what you're in the mood for.
And speaking of in the mood for, what about you, Max? Which do you prefer, the close and personal sci-fi film or big and splody?
It's actually similar to what Doris has said. If I want to shut my brain off and just, you know, sit there and basically go, big and splody is fun.
Daytime fireworks.
daytime fireworks. But really, I like the smaller scale because for me, it's got to be the characters. You've got to like the characters. And it's very hard, not impossible, but it's hard to make likable characters when there's like, you know, a cast of thousands. Whoever was used the example of Independence Day, that's actually pretty solid. That's Bill why that movie. Said Laddie Buck. Well done, me fine Irish eye. The characters, we like them, we care about them, so it's much more entertaining and it's much more engaging. I tend to prefer the smaller scale because I think it's a little easier to get character development if it's done well. That's the other thing I'll agree with a lot of the folks who said it. Honestly, the scale is less important than the quality.
Mm.
What about you? You got to come down one way or the other?
I actually like a mix of both. I like personal small films that have splody in them. Like the splody in that case often means there's some real actual problem that's about to happen or does happen, or they manage to get around and escape after it happens. Mm-hmm. So I guess I'm sort of in the same boat as you and Doris and a couple other people. Story and characters are the most important thing. I don't really care about the setting or the explosions. Although if they're really cool, I kind of like, because watching that stuff blow up in Independence Day is pretty cool.
Yeah.
They did a really good job with it too. And there are parts of me that would not mind seeing the Capitol Records building totally being destroyed.
I do remember when they showed the teaser for it in theaters, and they show them blowing up the Senate, which I don't know if it happens in the movie. They show us blowing up the White House.
Yeah, I don't think they do the
whole Capitol audience starts cheering.
Yeah, because that would go over well, wouldn't it? But
yeah.
But thank you for all those terrific answers. We love hearing from you.
Thank you.
But won't you answer just one more? This week, we'd love to know, what is your favorite epic movie and why? Mm-hmm. We're talking like this week's film, Cleopatra, but also we've got the Odyssey out there. That's another pretty epic movie. But anything like that, any giant movie, we wouldn't even include Sound of Music. That's pretty epic. Basically, does it have an intermission in it? We'll be coming back to the intermission. The intermission was adequate. Anyway, we are getting some of those big tentpole movies back in theaters these days, and we'd like to know if that's going to be a continuing trend, if you would look forward to that sort of thing. So do tell us, and we'll go over how at the end of the show. But right now, I'd like to know, Max, seen anything good? So have you seen anything good, Max?
This week... No, not really.
It's going to be my turn.
No, there's a couple of things I'm looking forward to, but nothing I've actually seen. What about you? What'd you see?
Well, I saw one really, really horrible thing and one pretty good thing. The really horrible thing, which I told you about, is a grade Z science fiction film never heard of.
It is a good sign.
Starring Darren McGavin and Nick Adams. Nick Adams, might know from a couple Godzilla films. Or as Johnny Yuma, the Rebel, from the show of the same name. But this was a film that couldn't have cost more than $10. Really couldn't. It honestly made some of Ed Wood's films look like they had production values.
Yikes!
This is a 1968 film called Mission Mars. And
it's not about the candy bar, is it?
I wish it had been, because that would have been sweet. Get it? Because film, so cheap that the space helmets, if you can call them that, don't have any covering below the chin, so they're just open to the air when they're on Mars.
Everyone knows human necks are immune to vacuum.
Well, also there's no tubes or anything coming into them, so they're just breathing down below their chin. That's it. And the spacesuits, obviously made out of some sort of knit fabric. Guys, you should have worn your briefs that day. I'm just saying.
Oh dear. They forgot the dance belts, huh?
Otherwise, the Martians might come out, if you know what I mean.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's available on YouTube. So if you want to watch something really, really awful, I highly recommend Mission Mars. It'll actually make you enjoy the day that Mars invaded Earth that much more. But on the good side, yes. Spider-Man, Brand New Day, went and caught yesterday at the theater. Nice. And it's a really nice mix of drama and action. There's some great action. Mm. There are some villains in there. I'm like, oh my God, where did you dredge it? The Scorpion? Really?
Okay. Oh,
but he's
Gergen.
Done well. And I think, is the guy who's got sort of the straight up flat top and pointed teeth, is that Tombstone?
Yeah, I think so.
So he's in there briefly too. And I'm just like, wow. Dear. Okay.
All right.
But we've got a couple other people. I don't think it's a real surprise to say that, hey, we have Mark Ruffalo reprising his Hulk role. I really like Mark Ruffalo as Dr. Bruce Banner.
He's a lot of fun.
He is cool. But yeah, good mix of action. And there's actually some good humor in it. And some
ice cream.
I mean, technically there is an ice cream truck in it. Briefly.
Aha! I'll have a good humor, thank you.
But it had a character I did not know was going to be in this film. So, yeah, if you haven't looked too much at the previews, I enjoyed it. It's a lot of fun. Go to a theater that has lots of loud, splody speakers in it, and I recommend it. Yeah, Spider-Man Brand New Day.
Good to know. Thanks.
But we've put this off long enough. We have to get back to Cleopatra and...
The facts.
Oh boy, there's going to be tons of trivia, so I'm going to try and keep this as tight as possible. First up, the $35 elephant in the room budget.
Ooh.
44 million gazangas.
Wow, this is 1963 gazangas.
In today's money, that would be about 463 million, which to be fair...
That's an Avengers movie.
It is or a Star Wars movie, because Force Awakens broke the $500 million mark. Yeah, so... Mm. Take! Now remember, this was the top earning film of 1963.
Ooh, it's going to be a lot. Yeah.
57.8 million, which is...
What?
Yeah.
That's not enough million.
But you have to realize, again, for 63, that was a lot of money.
Yeah.
A lot of people went to go see this film, but it nearly bankrupted an already struggling 20th Century Fox. But don't worry, it would break even in 1973.
Oh, wow. 10 years. Okay.
Yep. Yeah. Ouch. And then they closed the books on that film so they wouldn't have to pay anybody any more money.
Yeah.
Running time. Well, that's up for grabs, it seems. Originally, director Joseph L. Mankiewicz, or it probably is pronounced Mankiewicz, but I think it's always been pronounced here, Mankiewicz, wanted this to be two movies, which together would run about 5.5 hours. Yikes.
Oh,
this got cut down to 1 5-hour, then a 4.5, and then finally a 4-hour cut for the premiere. However... There was both a post-release 3.5-hour cut and the one that most people saw, a so-called neighborhood theater cut of only 3 hours. The one I saw was about 4.
Yeah, me too.
Mank was not the first director on this film. Ruben Mamoulian was. And he remained for a while, starting in 1959. Filming started in 1960, but the set was soon fraught with problems, including both a hairdresser's threatened strike in London and Liz Taylor first contracting meningitis and then pneumonia, setting production back many months. By the end of the year, the movie was already millions over budget and had produced 10 minutes of usable film.
Ooh.
Yeah. In early 61, Mamoulian resigned as director.
Mm.
Mank was brought in as director, partially through a recommendation by Liz Taylor herself. And then Mank proceeded to direct the film by day and write it by night, resorting to drug use to keep himself going. Yeah. Roddy McDowall was supposed to be up for a Best Supporting Actor nod, but Fox mistakenly submitted him as Best Actor. This was refused by the Academy. Fox... actually apologetic, took out a full-page ad in Variety to note their mistake and laud his performance.
Oh, that was nice of them.
Yeah. That cool Roman Forum set? Yeah, that's 3 times bigger than the original Forum.
No, original Forum was huge.
It was huge.
Gigantic. Yeah, huge.
Liz's costume budget alone was $194,000. And she had the most costume changes of any actor, coming in at 65 until Julie Andrews beat her out 5 years later with 125 in the movie Star, and that record still holds.
Star? I don't know that one.
Me either.
But it has Julie Andrews in 125 different costumes. Okay.
Yep. Speaking of Liz and budget, when asked if she'd take the part, she jokingly said, and apparently she was in the bath at the time she said this, she jokingly said she'd do it for a cool million and 10% of the profits. And that's what she got.
Wow.
Eventually, with royalties and other fees, her final take for this movie was $7
million. Dang.
So in some ways, this movie was profitable, just not for
the, her.
Yeah. Adding to her coffers, she insisted that this movie not only be shot in 70, but that it use the prestigious Todd AO sound system, which had been invented by her previous husband and which assured her that she'd get fees from that as well.
What a coincidence!
Amazing!
What are the odds?
Yeah. So many boats were made for this movie that it was joked that Fox had the third largest navy in the world. Yeah, I thought they were miniatures. They weren't.
Wow.
Yeah. Liz and Dick. Yeah, this was the beginning of their thing. Both were married to other people at the time, but they were so inhabiting their characters, they just kept going when the cameras stopped.
Great.
This caused a lot of unwanted attention, some even from the Pope. He came in and said, no, 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 naughty, 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 knock it off. Besides, this is something I didn't put in the trivia, but what the hell. At the time, Liz was Jewish, so, which I didn't know.
That's right. She converted when she married Eddie Fisher.
Yeah, who I wouldn't have guessed was Jewish either.
Yeah, he played that down. I mean, he's,
you think?
He changed, I think his name was Fishman with the German spelling originally.
Do you think he told Debbie Reynolds?
Probably not. I doubt it.
Yeah. Co-star Rex Harrison was the only one, or I should say the only actor, who actually got an Oscar nod.
Hmm.
It seems Mank wasn't a fan of this movie, and he almost Alan Smithied it.
Oh!
Oops!
Oh, dear.
And Elizabeth Taylor's reaction upon first viewing? She barfed.
Oh! She wasn't quite over the pneumonia, or she really didn't like it?
They didn't say. Just said she first saw the movie and threw up. So there you go. Hey, how come little Caesarian's accent comes and goes talking of Michelangelo's? When Liz got sick, the American kid hard to play the part got taller, so they had to substitute an Italian kid with a really thick accent.
Technically, an Italian accent might be vaguely similar to a Roman accent.
However, he was the only one in the film who had one, so that was a big no.
Yeah, there is that.
And honestly, there is tons more trivia about
this
movie.
There must be acres of it. Acres.
Is there any little thing you want to throw in before we...
Not really. Yeah. I mean, there are things, but no, we've got plenty.
Honestly, if you want to know more about the Liz and Dick situation, see our entire episode on Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf.
Yeah.
Because that's pretty much their relationship in a nutshell, or in a film, if you like. So, yeah.
I dreamed of a big pool of scotch.
Don't talk about our clown, Martha. Yeah. this is going to be the plot, which is going to be the most truncated I've ever written.
Yeah, otherwise this would be the whole show. Yeah. Go for it.
Oh, boy. There's this guy, Julius Caesar, and he's been wandering around and making empires and stuff. He comes to Egypt, and there's this ruling pair of siblings, Ptolemy and Cleopatra, that just don't get along. Caesar basically throws Ptolemy to the wolves and sets Cleo up as sole ruler of Egypt. And then he kind of marries her and has a kid with her. She wants to rule the world with him. Wouldn't that be keen? But see, Rome isn't a dictatorship and really doesn't want to be one. So the senators, sensing Caesar's rising ego and power grabbiness, decide that stabbing him to death is a much better idea. So they do that thing. This puts Octavian on the seat, and he doesn't like this upstart Cleopatra much either, as she has food and gold and stuff, and he really wants that food and gold and stuff. In the meantime, Caesar's supporter and Roman favorite Mark Antony suddenly realizes he's in love with Cleo, and gee, he's no Caesar, but maybe she can mold him into one, and together they can rule the world. Yeah, Octavian's going to have to take a pass on that. Thing is, Mark's kind of wishy-washy, so when Octavian decides to offer Mark this really cool position ruling over the eastern third of the Roman Empire if he marries Caesar's sister, Mark takes him up on it, and in so doing, pisses Cleo off.
But really, he totally still loves her. That wife, you don't mean a thing.
Eventually, Cleo comes around and says,
okay, I'll buy it if you don't go back to Rome and you totally try and take over and stuff.
Mark says, yeah, okay, and does, but he totally stinks at it because everyone knows his war tricks. So he gets defeated and all pouty and stuff. Cleo tries to shake him out of it, but with only two legions left and Octavian coming this way, Mark just can't perform, if you know what I mean.
Happens to every man sometimes.
His legions desert him and he retreats back to Cleo, taking his own life. Octavian waltzes back into the palace and tells Cleo,
hey, baby, you with me now. We're going to head back to Rome and you're going to tell everyone how cool I am and then that we're all tight and stuff now.
Cleo says yes, but what she really means is,
hey, I'm just going to stick my hand in this basket with a snake in it and die and join my wonderful milksoppy Mark in the afterlife. Bye!
And she does that, and 4.5 hours later, the end.
The film.
You know, folks, if you ever wanted to read or see Shakespeare's Julius Caesar and Antony and Cleopatra, you don't have to anymore. Mike has just summed up both of them.
Thank you, Max. My performance touched you that much.
It did.
Show me on the doll where it touched you. Oh, dear. Yeah. So.
Yes, it touched me like a finger down the throat.
Mm-hmm. Cleopatra. Max.
Yeah.
I know you didn't see it when it came out. Although it was technically possible for you to do so.
Shut up.
Have you ever sat and watched Cleopatra?
From beginning to end, no. I have watched big chunks of it because it used to show up on TV all the time.
Mm.
But mostly it was like, well, I'll watch some of this. Oh, it's dinner time. Or, oh, okay. My leg's falling asleep. it's how late? So, no, I've never watched it from start to finish before.
Yeah.
How about you?
No. I never had any want to see it. I mean, the only Sand and Sandal epic that I've ever really sat through, and that's only because it's funny, is the Ten Commandments. And parts of it are really funny. They're not supposed to be. Pretty much any time Charlton Heston is on screen, it's a laugh riot, because dear gods, that man is terrible. But we've talked about his greasiness before, so. And we have, oh dear. This film has a lot of people in it.
A lot of people. We're not going to get to everybody, but...
No. Let's start off with one of the biggies.
Yeah.
It's Elizabeth Taylor as Cleopatra.
Liz and her violet eyes.
They're not, but that's okay.
As so many Egyptian women have.
Or anybody, because...
And alabaster skin.
Yeah.
As so many Egyptian women have.
All right. We might as well get the racism out of the way here.
Yeah.
There are black people in this film... And they're all in slave roles.
They're all in slave roles. They don't get any lines. They are basically scenery.
Yeah.
Some of them are very impressive scenery when they dance, but they are just scenery.
Oh, some of those dancers. Oh, my God. but yeah, as you well know, Egypt was always, always ruled by and mostly populated by white people.
Yep. A lot of whom had English accents.
All of whom. Especially Romans. Mm-hmm. Romans, hell. That's been proven. Yeah.
This has been, well, we knew this from I, Claudius. You know? Yeah. All the Romans were English.
Yeah. So Elizabeth Taylor, in one of her major, major roles, this is a biggie.
This was a biggie. And the second one that Mankiewicz worked on, the one before that, she was, you know, matched very cleverly with another actress who was clearly of her caliber, Katharine Hepburn.
Oh, wow. I bet she spanked the screen with Liz.
Suddenly last summer. I don't know what you mean.
What did you think of Liz?
Hey, I want to rule Egypt and the world!
A number of my notes use the word shrill. I never watched a Liz Taylor film before. I have never watched... Now, that's not true. We did Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf for this show. And I was like, okay, that's supposed to be a big major film, and it was in Go See Her episode. But I tried to watch...
Giant. We did Giant.
Did we?
Yeah.
Okay. I tried to watch Cat on a Hot Tin Roof once, but as soon as she showed up, she was so shrill, I'm like, I can't watch this. I don't get the appeal of Elizabeth Taylor. I just don't. At all.
Okay.
Like, I don't think she's particularly good in this. Now, to be fair... I'm not sure how much of that is her, and we'll get back to this, but I don't think she's particularly compelling.
She has some presence. She is beautiful. She was one of the great beauties of her time.
I guess.
No, that, I'm sorry. I got the majority on my side. That is the one thing she had going for her was her looks. Because no, she is a profoundly mediocre actor.
Yeah.
People have pointed this out for decades.
I mean, to be quite blunt, even as a gay guy, she's got quite a rack.
Yeah, she's very impressive.
Which is a horrible thing to say, but there's one point where we see pretty much all of Liz.
Yeah. Yeah, she's nude. I have in my notes. Oh my goodness, she's nude.
Yeah.
Pretty much. I mean, she has strategic cloth in strategic places, but pretty racy for 1963.
I thought so. She is in this film. I cannot dispute the fact that she is in this film.
Yeah, I gotta say, she doesn't really... First off, she doesn't look anything like Cleopatra could possibly have looked. A lot of people argue about what she looked like. Some people say she was actually... that she was black. That she had, I think, Nubian ancestry. She might have. Everyone keeps forgetting that a lot of the ancient Greeks, these were not honkies.
No.
These were very dark. They were dark-skinned, elegant, flashing black eyes people. You know, the Egyptians, and certainly the Egyptians, for God's sake.
Well, look at the walls.
Yeah.
paintings of people, and they're all people of color.
Yeah.
I know. White is a color. She's okay.
She's okay. She wears the costumes very well, which really is most of her job.
Five of them.
All of those costumes.
And to be fair, I'm sure that people went to see this film because she was a thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But also a thing, we have Richard Burton. Let's see.
I'm poor. I'm Welsh. My name's not Richard Burton yet.
Here's my note on Richard Burton. Burton's acting seems to consist of equal parts mumbling and equal parts speaking really, really quickly and then screaming random words in his lines.
Yeah, Burton can be really good. If you've ever seen Beckett, which he's terrific in, and he's very subdued in, when he can control himself, he's really good. When he's just losing it, like in this, like, "Nay, Mark Antony, stand before you!"
Not fast enough, Max. Pick up the pace.
True.
I said the other two notes I have for him are, when Dick overacts, he really overacts. However... Yeah. When Liz overacts, she really overacts.
One of the problems with the two of them is, deep down, he is a significantly better actor than she is. And it's really apparent, even though he's not doing much of a job in this. Let's just say, when we see Mark Antony drunk, that wasn't always acting. Burton was legendary for being drunk on set.
Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
The other note I had was, when Antony's angry, there's something Shatner-esque in his performance.
he does throw in a lot of pauses. He has real power and real presence.
Yeah. But he also sucks air like Brenda Vaccaro.
Yeah, and there's just teeth marks all over the scenery when he's done.
Yeah. So, yeah. Rex Harrison. I'm actually really interested. What did you think of Rex Harrison?
I think he's the best thing in the movie. I really like his take on Caesar. I mean, he's not, first off, Caesar was supposed to be a terrific warrior.
Yeah.
However, no one is really sure if that's true or if that just grew up around after him. He was what is universally accepted, he was a genius tactician. He was a brilliant general.
Yeah.
He wasn't necessarily a physical badass. We don't know.
Yeah.
And I think he pulls off the whole tactical genius, usually very calm and controlled, but losing it toward the end. I think he does that really well.
I will say I like his part, especially in that he's always one step ahead of Cleopatra, because he shows up and she's like, I demand you do this, this, and this. And he goes, oh, demand? Really? That's fine. Meanwhile, in the back of his head, he's like, I'm going to do that, but I'm just not doing it for the reasons you want me to do them for. And when she falls in love with him, quote, end quote, it's pretty obvious that he knows that she's only interested in him because she wants to rule the world by his side, and she thinks together they can. And also, he's not getting any from Miss Frigid back home.
Yeah, Calpurnia is not exactly hot
but
stuff.
I did kind of expect him to sort of break into song every once in a while. My friend the doctor.
He doesn't sing.
But you know what I mean.
Tell me, Mark Antony, why can't a Roman be more like a Greek?
So he's fine. I mean, I think he does probably one of the better Rex per Harrison performances I've seen. I don't think he has much of a range. He's sort of the Jimmy Stewart has range. Who am I thinking of? Humphrey Bogart, who has a little bit of range, but you don't hire Humphrey Bogart to play Shakespeare. Although
you hire Humphrey Bogart to play Humphrey Bogart, like you hire Rex Harrison to play Rex Harrison. Fine. You know, I do have to say one bit of trivia. One of the people they were considering, and I know you always laugh about him, but they were talking about Laurence Olivier for Julius Caesar, which I think Larry.
Hey, he's
Olivier.
The one who said it. Call me Larry. So there you go.
Yep. I think that would have been much more impressive because while Harrison, I think, has the quiet genius, he doesn't have a lot of gravitas. He doesn't have a lot of
presence. Max, you know why? Because then you'd have Laurence Olivier across from Liz Taylor.
Oh, that's true. And I don't care what she was wearing. Nobody would ever notice her.
Oh, she would shrill and scream until somebody noticed her.
Yeah,
I'm going to skip a couple. Hugh Cronin was apparently in here. Yep. Oh, Sisogenes, find a man who's solid. Oh, sorry.
What?
It's from Boys from Syracuse. Sorry.
He's her Greek advisor.
I know Hugh Cronin. I didn't recognize him, so that's fine. Oh, is he the guy in the beard? Oh, yes. Okay.
He's the guy who Octavian kills with the spear.
Okay. He's fine.
Oops. Yeah, spoiler. Sorry, the story's 2,000 years old.
Yeah,
get over
and
it.
I will throw this in there now. I checked. Apparently, like time-wise, the sequence of events is actually pretty accurate historically.
Yeah,
it's all the other stuff that's. But we'll get to that. Skip. I don't care. Martin Landau, Rufio.
I knew that was coming.
I like Martin Landau, but. He's not a great actor. He's fine.
He is limited. This was not a good part for him.
Name me one that is besides Bela Lugosi.
When he was in North by Northwest.
Oh, I didn't see it. That's actually why he got this role.
He's really good and creepy.
Is he? I can see that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he tries to play more leading men types, and that's not really... Also, I hate to say it, some of that Roman dress, Martin, wear pants. Okay.
Yeah.
Roddy McDowell.
Chicken legs.
Roddy McDowell.
Roddy McDowell.
He's the
who
one.
Who shows us that Octavian is a damn dirty ape.
I have to say, I actually think he's the best actor in this film because he's the only character I cared at all about, and I hated him. And I think you're supposed
to. Just Roddy McDowelling all over the place.
But he's not Roddy McDowelling the way he usually does. He's actually being loud and forceful, and Roddy doesn't usually do that. Roddy's just sort of quietly creepy and trying to hope that nobody knows he's gay. Oops. Sorry. However, I do have to ask you a question, Max.
Yes?
What's with the curly blonde bath mat?
Octavian famously did have yellow hair.
Who cares?
Because it was a big deal. Romans
and
in
Cleopatra
general didn't
was black.
Have that. Yeah, so, yeah, but at least she had black hair too.
Because
so,
he looks weird.
Yeah, he did. Although, the wig is not doing him any favors.
He actually looks a lot like John Hurt did when he played
Caligula.
Yeah, in Claudius. So, yeah.
Maybe that's a to that.
We can't leave out. Yes. This is a very famous Jackie Chan film. Jackie Chan is in this
film. Amazing. Yes. And her stunts. Wait, her?
Yeah. This is not that Jackie Chan. It's Jacqueline Chan who plays Lotus or whatever.
It's Lotus. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. But, the treacherous handmaiden.
But I love the fact that her name is Jackie Chan.
Yeah, that is fun.
We have a very unrecognizable Carol O'Connor in here.
As Casca. Yeah. That's right. When I finally spotted him, I kept waiting for jeez, this Julius Caesar is such a meathead.
The thing is the first time we see him, he's fine, and I almost didn't recognize him. The second time, his accent kind of slips in.
Yeah, you suddenly realize, I didn't know Casca was from Queens. Okay.
Yeah. Real quick, going back to Liz and Rex. What did you think about their chemistry?
Their what now?
Their chemistry.
No, I think you got that wrong.
Their smoldering averageness.
I don't get that. She has chemistry with Mark Antony, let's face it. Because of course she does, because, you know.
Yeah, she has some.
But Rex Harrison is so icy in general.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard for him to have chemistry with anybody, you know, on the sexual level, even the romantic level.
Well, also, it was also one of the most obvious stage kisses I've ever seen. As soon as he approaches her, he sucks his lips in and they just press face together.
I mean, some of it is also, and this is, you know, they weren't quite this. Cleopatra at this point is supposed to be 21, maybe 20. Liz was in her 30s. And
Caesar
is supposed to be 52.
I'd buy the 52.
Yeah.
But she 20, which isn't creepy.
21.
21, yeah, huh? Okay.
Yeah.
That's like Butterfield 8. That's when she was 21. That's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just I'm going to argue about the chemistry between Liz and Richard too, because I felt there's literally a scene, and this is right, I think, when she's visited Rome. It's before this is before the intermission. I want to come back to the intermission. But she's there, and Mark Anthony looks over, and you literally see on his face the line is written in his scripts, "Oh, I love you now." Like, there's nothing leads up to this. And then later on, she's going, "Oh, ever since I saw you when I was 10, I loved you." And I'm like, really? Because you didn't even give him the time of day or look in his way when he was there before. So yeah. I mean, it's supposed to be there, right? That's what this whole thing's about. And hey, I'm going to go here right now. This movie's not about Cleopatra. It's about the men surrounding Cleopatra.
Oh, I don't know. I think there's a lot about her in this.
All we know is that she wants to rule the world with somebody.
Well, everybody wants to rule the world. Here's your fears told us that.
Fears for queers? Oops.
Oh, dear.
I can say that because Max is Jewish. Anyway.
Yep. Wait, what? I can say that because I have a gay friend.
Yeah. So we know she wants to rule the world. Why? Where did she come from? What's the deal with her brother? Why did she try to kill her brother? I mean, okay, admittedly, when we see Ptolemy, it's like, okay, I kind of get it.
How could you not want to kill him? Come on. I wanted to kill him in the first shot.
What's that word that we use so often? He's very slappable. That's the word I want. Yes, very slappable.
He is slappable. He doesn't, what a slappable little twerp.
He doesn't quite go, "Hey, she tried to kill me. You need to get rid of her. She was mean." But he kind of does.
And by the way, why is there a white Abyssinian cat in Egypt?
Oh, I'm sorry. Why shouldn't there be a white Abyssinian cat? I don't care. Cats are awesome and they should be in all the movies.
But it should have been a Siamese.
Now, here's the thing. That actually, that cat may have been there not on purpose, because I'd left this out of trivia. There was a point where they were trying to shoot a shot and there was this meowing and they couldn't find it. And they finally realized that there was not only a cat on set, but it had gotten into an area they couldn't get to, and it had had kittens.
Oh, geez.
That cat cost them $17,000 for not being able to shoot.
Oh, yeah, but come on this movie, if somebody dropped a sandwich from the craft table, it cost $5,000.
Oh, dear gods, what they did not build for this film. Now, to be fair, there were some sets that were part of another production that was coming up that they were doing in Italy at the time. But still, like, I was like, oh, there's the Golden Barge miniature. Oh, dear gods, it's not a miniature. That's a real giant barge. Holy crap. Oh, dear gods. Those ships that they're showing the naval battle in briefly. Oh gods, their nose are not small.
Whew. Nope, they're maybe toys, but they're full. People are on them. But what always gets me, and I got to say, this is the scene I've seen before because they always show it. And I think it really shows some genuine grandeur. And that is when Cleopatra first arrives at Rome with her son, Caesarion.
Prince Ali, mighty is he, Ali Ababa.
Pretty much. I mean, she's brought in on almost, I think, a full-scale replica of the Sphinx.
Yeah.
Made out of, I think, I don't know, obsidian or
I mean, plywood.
Jet? I don't know.
Plywood.
Well, yes.
Everyone knows that Egypt was well known for its plywood.
They had huge plywood forests, everyone knows. Yeah.
You know, it is quite the scene. It is quite the, and I'm going to use this word many times with this episode, pageantry. Oh, this film is all about the pageantry. Yes, it's a very impressive. There's very few scenes in this film that are not impressive. Even the opening, they do this wide shot showing you Alexandria. And I know it's a painting. A lot of it's a painting. But it's a really well done shot. And most of the scenes that involve this kind of stuff are really well done, you know? And even the scene, like, we'll do this thing where We're looking at what's supposed to be a painting on a wall of some ruin somewhere, and it instantly turns into the real action. Like, somebody had to match that frame. Like, literally every little grain had to be perfect. And they did this with real paintings. What else are you going to do? AI in 1963? So they spent a lot of money on this film, and it shows, except when we get to the naval battle, and it's like, look at all the ships over there. Up close, you only get to see four. But no, just assume the rest of them are there.
Yeah, totally. Lots of ships, lots of ships. Yeah, there's two.
And background visually, actors, lots and
this
lots.
This is what, armies of them. I mean, you got to remember, this movie won four Oscars.
Yeah.
None of it was for acting.
Funny that.
I should also point out, none of it was for
script writing,
the script.
Yeah, or directing.
It wasn't even nominated. It was all cinematography, special effects, costume, sound, all of that.
Yeah. Phew. This film fails one test twice.
What's that?
Twice in this film, we get the Wilhelm scream.
Oh, of course we do.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say at least one of the Egyptian hackers says, I'm in.
No. Egyptian hackers.
Those Egyptians, am I crazy, or did a lot of them look like Vulcans?
There was one in particular I had a note. It was her advisor or like something, his Ramos or something like that. I said, he's a Romulan. Yeah. Watch out for that guy. He's a Romulan. They did have a very Serac kind of look to them.
Yeah,
nice bowl. You should keep that one.
Very, very black bowl cut hair pieces. Yeah.
Yeah. There was one quote that I'm like, okay, you guys really didn't do your historical research. And it's one point where Mark Antony says, the eyes of a statue always without life. Except there's a lot of evidence to show that all those statues were actually very brightly painted. So,
Well, he was a Philistine. What do you want?
And, yeah. But pageantry, don't forget.
Pageantry.
You know, sometimes when I'm watching a film, I know there's a sign. There will be a little something that warns me that I'm going to have a problem with this film. With this film, I don't know if you caught this, Max, but this was early in the film. The film starts with an overture.
Ah, yes. I did notice that subtle bit.
There's only one film I know with an overture that I've actually liked, and that was Sound of Music. Mm-hmm. Other than that, usually it means, oh, you're in for a long, long ride.
You better go to the bathroom now.
Yeah. Speaking of that, let's talk about this. What did you think of the pacing?
Very uneven.
Yeah.
Parts of it, like the action sequences, the battle sequences, those move along really nicely. Most of the scenes with Caesar, I thought, moved along well.
The first half of the film, you mean?
The first half, yeah, I'll just say it. The first half of the film moves along so much better than the second. And then the second, it's like they dropped a whole bag full of anchors.
Yeah.
And every sequence with Liz and Dick is just like,
well, we have to wait for
him. I love you.
We have to wait for him to remember his lines over the booze. Oops. His speed of a it's almost like, if I don't say these all real right now, I'm going to forget them all. But seriously.
And her, with her kind of William Shatner pauses,
she has Adam West pauses.
Oh, I am not merely the daughter of ISIS. I am ISIS.
ISIS, Farfingdugan, Toyota-thon.
I have my notes. Yes, I am. Oh, mighty ISIS.
We did the same thing. Not that I'm surprised, mind you. The problem is that no matter which half of the film we're talking about, beginning or end, there is no real sense of how much time is passing between scenes. Sometimes they tell us, and it's like, oh, it's been 4 years. Wait, it has? You didn't even grow facial hair. Like, what the heck? And
he shaves.
Yeah, and even when they do tell us, there's no evidence. Like, it's 2 weeks later now. Oh, it is? I just said so. Oh.
Yes, sir. We've been together 4 years. Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then the unfortunately named Caesarian is like, he's old now, he's in school. Okay.
Sure, why not?
Of course, you know, they could have shown time passing by actually using the same kid because, you know, he was taller and everything.
Yeah.
But the pacing, and, you know, when you find out things like, oh, Mank was literally injecting himself with amphetamines at night so he could write all through the night and then direct the next day. It's like,
I believe it.
Yeah, and he wanted it to be longer? Okay.
Yeah. I got to say, there are some parts of this. I like the fact that they mentioned that Caesar had seizures.
Yeah.
That he suffered from them. Nobody knows what.
No.
Some people say it's epilepsy. Some people, they said it was a series of microstrokes. Yep. Other people just said it just happened. But I like the fact that they bring up that Caesar is embarrassed by this. He's ashamed of it. But other people, and this part is true in the mythologies, the falling sickness, as they called it was supposed to be a divine gift. It was like when you fell because you were being touched by one of the gods and you can't stay sane in the moment when that happens.
Yeah.
Alexander the Great had it too, and I think so did Genghis Khan.
Huh, interesting.
Not Genghis Khan, Kublai, grandson.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. I did look that. When I went to see it, I just typed in, how historically accurate is this movie? And was surprised to find out that, again, there's some stuff that's made up. For example, Caesar never married Cleopatra. That is not a thing.
No.
He had a son with her, he did not marry her because Rome would not have stood for that. And also, they blame him for the burning of the library at Alexandria. That has also been known to be they blamed him for it, but there's no actual evidence that he did it. So
that is kind of, that always makes me sad when I see that scene.
Well, especially when it's just set fire to their fleet, which I thought, was there any opposition to this? Oh, you can just walk up and go, and then you set fire to the Egyptian fleet. Okay. So he does that. And it's like, well, it might burn down part of the town. Oopsie.
Eh. Well, again, I'm sorry. That's very Julius Caesar. Yeah. He's like, okay, do you mean there's going to be collateral damage? Eh.
Yeah.
You can't make an omelet without murdering people.
I don't think that's how that goes.
I'm almost sure it is.
There's a scene on the golden barge where basically Cleopatra has been like, I'm not coming to Rome. You need to come to me. And she basically decides to shovel some dirt on this barge. And she shows up in Rome and goes, no. The boat is Egypt. You have to come on the boat. I'm not coming out.
Uh-huh.
And he goes on and they have a party. I have to ask you a question, Max. There's some entertainment on this this party barge. What's with the dancing Smurf?
La, 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 la.
Smurfs hold a very special place in Greek and Egyptian mythology. I don't. It was basically shock value. They used to do that. The Romans did. I didn't know the Egyptians did this, but they used to do things like body dyes or makeup to make people look outrageous. But I don't know why. I mean, the guy's supposed to be kind of the god Pan,
I guess.
And I don't remember anything about him being blue.
Because there's another character who's supposed to be Pan, and he's making out with an actor that I actually thought was Liz Taylor at first, and then realized, no, they just found somebody to look like her. I'm sure it was her stand-in or something.
Something like
and
that.
And I'm like, wow, look at the cojones on those guys, because they're like, hey, Queenie, how would you like to see somebody screwing you, and it's a Greek satyr thing, ha-ha-ha-ha. It's like, are you sure you're really that? No, I don't know. You shouldn't do that. She didn't seem to care.
Well, most of that, I think, was a shot at Mark Antony. It's the idea like, oh, here's Cleopatra and here's this horny satyr. And guess what, Aunt Mark? That's you.
That's actually a pretty good description of Richard Burton, isn't it? Horny satyr.
Yeah, it kind of is. Yeah. Horny drunk satyr. Yep.
And of course, the best part is they would, of course, divorce their own spouses, get married, divorce each other, marry somebody else, and then divorce them and then get married again.
What is it? They were married three times?
I think it was
times?
Just two, or twice. Yeah. I think it was actually just twice.
Oh, was it twice?
I think. Okay. I don't know. But and I've got notes. Again, we're going back to the acting, but literally, I swear, Antony comes on at one point and goes, oh, did I mention I love you now? And her response is,
it does sort of come out of nowhere.
Oh, by the way, I always loved you, like when I first saw you when I was 12, but we didn't film that part.
No, you mean she says, hey, I always loved you when I was a kid.
Wow, you disliked her more than I did. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I couldn't help it. Years ago, I saw Martin Short do his impression of Elizabeth Taylor, and it has stayed in my head. And every time I watch her, I'm like, oh my God, he nailed her.
Mm. Yeah, but so did the fragrance White Diamonds, because apparently it smelled like fried chicken. Anyway, I will say this. When it comes to the kissing, though, with her and Rex Harrison, didn't buy it for an instant. With her and Richard Burton, I was like, oh, dear God, somebody yell cut, because I...
Oh, you know the director kept... okay, cut! Cut!
We can't film Dick, Tom. Let her go. It's 1963.
Let her go. Hey, hands on top of the clothes, please.
Yeah. But other than that, I just found their chemistry tepid. I didn't really buy it. But I will say, once they break up, the editing picks up speed, just not in a good way.
Not in always the best possible way. Yeah, I mean, I liked a lot of her servants. I liked how devoted they all are to her. I don't know why, but, you know, Polydorus, I think he's adorable. You know, I don't care that he's Italian and he's supposed to be Greek.
And she's supposed to be Egypt. I mean, she might as well be Egyptian by the court way of the court of Spain.
I admit, when I see...
Because there can be only one.
I saw Polydorus, I thought, is that Kang from Star Trek, Day of the Dove?
No.
It isn't.
It's Michael, oh God, what is his last name? I actually know the actor's name. He was also in episode of Star Trek. Of course, because everybody was. I will say, and I'm getting, we're already heading over time, but I will say that among all of the costume changes, my favorite is the one that comes at the end, and that is Cleopatra's green Burger King birthday crown. What the hell was that? It's like,
I don't know what the
we're
going to
gild
was.
A crown roast. We're going to paint it gold green and put it on your head.
The ceremonial crown roast of lamb. Yep.
Also, I hate to say this, but one of my last notes was for Cleo, will you please just die already?
Oh, ouch.
Well, she takes forever. I mean, and to quote MST3K, at one point I leaned back and screamed, end.
I didn't quite get to that point, but...
But, you know, other people might be thinking the same thing of us. Maybe we should
we should finish this up.
The finish.
So, Max.
Uh-huh.
Cleopatra. It is a legendary Hollywood film. It's pretty much... It is. Maybe skating on the very end of the golden age of Hollywood. It is a film made because TV was really pulling people out of the theaters and they needed to make these big, giant...
Something with scale.
Yeah. These huge budget films, although maybe not that huge. And it is a thing. No matter what, it is legendary. People still talk about... Well, we're still talking about it. I guess that we're people. But
I ain't people.
You're right. You're not.
Anyway,
but
I'm not.
You finally sat down and watched the whole thing.
Whole thing.
I know you love Golden Age of Hollywood. That's like one of your favorite eras.
I do.
What did you think of Cleopatra?
Needed an editor, but
it had one. Actually, look, they fired Mankiewicz. He was supposed to be editing it, and they fired him. And then they realized, because he was writing it as he was filming it, he's the only one who knows how to cut it. We had to hire him back.
Oops.
Yeah.
Whoopsie doodle.
Yeah.
Okay. I can't see sitting down and watching this movie for fun. It's just too much. And the acting is pretty mediocre. But this thing is an icon. It has influenced so many other movies. It has spawned so many imitators and parodies. Let's not kid ourselves. It is ripe. Or parody. It covers everything. There are sequences where you know they are actually using parts from Shakespeare. When Mark Anthony is standing on the steps with Caesar's corpse, you know he's doing the I come not to praise Caesar, but to bury him. You can actually, if you read his lips, that's what he's saying, but you can't hear him because they probably couldn't afford to pay for the dialogue. They didn't want to do that. They didn't want to change it up and bring in the Shakespeare. When we see Caesar dying on the Ides of March, we see him say, et tu, Brute. All these things out of the legends, out of the plays. I think there's a lot of really impressive callbacks. They used a lot of the original source material, you know, the life and times of Caesar, the works of Seneca, everybody. And it wasn't just based on the Shakespeare plays, because Shakespeare took a few liberties himself.
That's because he was trying to make it entertaining.
Yeah, well, he was also trying to keep it under 5 hours. I can't say it's an enjoyable film, but if you are at all into the history of Hollywood and the history of movies, it's one of those you kind of have to watch. You don't have to like it. But if you really want to see the history of Hollywood thrown right up there on the screen, I think this is it right there. In fact, it's almost the entire history of Hollywood. It's almost that long. So, again... I wouldn't say if you feel like watching a fun film with the family, no, it will put you to sleep probably.
Well, quick question, because again, I know how much you like Golden Age of Hollywood. I know that's like one of your, that and movies about making movies are two of your favorite things.
I like those.
If you didn't have, even though you've never seen it before, and this is that film, if you didn't have to watch this movie for the show, would you have continued watching it after the intermission?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Especially because I had seen, as I said, I saw pieces of it over the years. And the first half of this movie, I really like. And then Caesar dies, and so does the movie. The movie just slows to a crawl.
Beware the intermission of March. Okay.
Yeah, pretty much. What about you? I mean, you'd never seen this. No. I don't think you'd seen pieces of it.
No.
I'm guessing you didn't love it.
No.
But what happened? Yeah.
No, it's... But I will say this. This movie was made for a different time and a different audience. Mm. Very, very different. Now, to be fair, last week, the week before, I did go see The Odyssey, which is not as long. The Odyssey would need another hour to catch up to this film. And I will say, I enjoyed The Odyssey. I actually really did. I know that it is, well, I can't say it's fake because The Odyssey's fake, right? But because that being said, they took some liberties here and there, and they totally changed the moral compass of the film. But I did enjoy sitting in front of this big, epic story. You know, it was enjoyable. And there was no intermission in that. You just have to keep going. It's like, you better hold it, because or use that soda cup for its unintended purpose. So it's not the fact that it's an epic film. It's like you said, it's dull. I do, you know, I wasn't thinking of it this way, but, you know, and I'm not really a big Rex Harrison fan, but quite honestly, he was a lot more interesting to watch. And I really did like Roddy McDowall's Octavian because I hated him. He was the only character I had any emotional reaction to at all. It was like, oh, yeah, whatever, whatever. Ooh, I hate you. I hate you, which I think you're supposed to.
Yeah.
But it's like they're not even people, right? They're like archetypes. They're not three-dimensional. They don't have depth. And that's not what this movie's about. This movie is about bigger than life. This is about titles and you know, historical.
These are supposed to be legendary figures.
Yeah.
I mean, they are all historically real.
Yeah.
But they've been viewed through the lens of history as demigods, basically.
And also, I maintain the film's not about Cleopatra. We don't know much about her thought processes. Even the time, she doesn't even make any sense. Because she sits there and goes, I want my man to be ambitious. Stop being ambitious. Okay, now be ambitious again. And it's like, she gets all pissy when she feels left out. And it's like, you want me to rule the world? I can't do it from here. I have to go to Rome. No, you don't. Yes, I do. No, you don't. Yes, I do. I don't love you anymore. Mm-hmm. Except I totally do. And here's my gold barge. And la, 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 la. So
I love you, Kermit.
She sounds exactly like Miss Piggy.
Hi-ya!
Watch out, frog! We also like there's characters in there that apparently are very important, like Caesarion, and he just disappears. He only shows back up to die. Like,
well, yeah, that's the most significant thing he does, really.
Well, he's what, 8?
He technically, 10. In this, I think he's like 10 or 12. Historically, he died at the age of 17.
Oh, okay. Well, he
but Octavian
there.
Did have him killed.
Yeah.
That part is right.
There's also some really awkward stuff. There's a big fight scene between Mark Antony and Cleopatra near the end, and they keep switching scenes, and it's supposed to be the same argument. Yeah, and I know this
argument.
Because the costumes change, and the room changes, and the time of day changes. It's like, how long are they arguing for? But it's just, honestly, it's kind of a mess. Like Max said, it needs editing. I honestly think it might have been better as two films because it was supposed to originally be Caesar and Cleopatra and then Antony and Cleopatra.
That might have worked.
And it's like that in case, look whose name's first. Well, that's how it was written. It's like, yeah, everyone's circling her, but we don't know anything about her. And quite honestly, I mean, she picked the wrong guy and he was an idiot. I'm sorry, but he totally was. But yeah, but this was a big, big Hollywood film, to be fair. It's on pretty much every critic's list at some point.
Yep.
I guess if you're a serious historian of Hollywood, especially of the end of its golden era, because this film ended the Hollywood studio system. They're like, yeah, we're not paying for these anymore. We're going to get other people to pay for it. We'll just distribute it.
Yeah.
This was it. Mm-hmm. So am I glad I saw it? I guess. Do I wish I could have seen it with Max over 2 days where the intermission comes at bedtime and we could have imbibed something? Yes. Do I recommend it? No. Don't bother. It's just too huge. It's just too big. And honestly, I just don't care. So, yeah. But you know what I do care about? I care about your answers to our poll question. That's actually one of my better ones, I have to say.
Yeah, that's very good.
And we would like to know, what is your favorite epic movie and why? Because there's big films are starting to become a thing again because, once again, streaming is now doing the same thing TV did back in the 50s. So
yeah, I mean, hell, with the huge success of Megalopolis.
Oh, you know? Boy. Please see our entire episode of Megalopolis so you can't. I wonder if it's streaming. I don't know.
Anyway.
Yeah, but.
Yes, but of course. Hey, how can they answer the question?
Why, thank you, Liz.
Are you going to finish that?
You know, maybe, although she's dead, I wonder if Liz would show up on our hotline. That might be cool.
Oh, dear God.
Speaking of hotlines, you can answer our poll question by calling our hotline. Mm. That number is 617-398-7266. That number again, Liz, is 617-398-7266. But if you don't want to call, although we'd love you to, you can email us at us@maxmikemovies.com. Send us an email, give us an answer to the poll question, give us an idea for a series, give us an idea for a film we should include in a series. We have found our series 400th episode film. We're not going to tell you what it is. Not yet.
Nope.
But we have finally found our film. So we don't need any more suggestions for that.
No, thank you, though. But it's one of those films, once we figured it out, how could we ever have done anything else?
Exactly. It was perfect. But well, that's a few episodes down the road.
Yeah, that's late. That's down the road.
us@maxmikemovies.com is the email address. Go to the website, maxmikemovies.com. We get comments there often from Vince. I've said this a number of times lately. Cheese boy, we ain't heard nothing from you in a while, and we'd like to. So
crickets, nothing but crickets. Yeah.
So maxmikemovies.com. If there is a podcast app, we're on it, blah, 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 blah. And for social media, we are still on Facebook and Blueski. But Max, this is the end of tops and bottoms.
Yeah, well, I'll get back to that. But yes, we are now, after that confusing title, we're going to do a much more obvious thing. Because we here at Max Mike Movies, we care. And we want to educate as well as entertain. So we are about to watch movies because it's good for you.
Oh.
Yes, we are going to watch movies exclusively from the Criterion Collection.
Or the Criterion Channel.
Or the Criterion Channel. These are movies that you're not only supposed to see, you're supposed to like them.
Yeah.
And let's just say there is a remarkable variety of movies in the Criterion Collection. And we're going to talk about that and what the heck the Criterion Collection is and who Janus Films is and what the Prattle Theater has to do with this. All of the coming weeks.
But what's the first film we're going to tackle in? Because it's good for you.
It's good for you because this is one I do that people should see. It is a Howard Hawks black and white movie, His Girl Friday.
Oh, I have heard of this and I've never seen it.
Yes, it's Cary Grant and Rosalind Russell.
Oh.
It's quite a cast. And we'll see what you think, but you might want to do some wind sprints first, because they talk really fast.
Oh, so is Richard Burton now, in this?
No, he is not. But hang on, before we go, I've just had enough of this. I got to look up, what the hell is everybody, you keep giggling about tops and bottoms.
Oh, we need to go right now. I'm sorry. No, so join us next Monday for His Girl Friday.
Oh.
This has been a co-production of The Voice of Max and The Movie Wrench.
Oh. Oh, dear.